The Athletic. Hello and welcome back to Pod on the Tyne, the Athletic's Newcastle United podcast. My name's Taylor Payne and I'm drowning in my own nonsense. My name's Taylor Payne and I'm joined by a triumvirate of terror, George Calkin, Chris Woff and Jacob Whitehead. How are we doing, chaps? George, how are you?
Yeah, we've got the band back together.
We have.
Yeah, I'm okay. I'm a bit gutted from last weekend still, I have to say.
Yeah.
So just trying to lift myself for the run-in for the men and women. But yeah, it was nice to see Jacob last weekend. Nice to spend a bit of time with Ollie as well. But not the result we wanted, albeit the one we are very used to.
Absolutely. Jacob as well, you mentioned there. Jacob's back. How are you doing, Jacob? You all right?
I'm very good. Well, I didn't enjoy the result last weekend. I was very sad for him. But the one bit of it I did get a silver lining out of was being on the train with George on the way back into London and just hearing some of the noises of despair emanating from the seat opposite me. Just the occasional silence punctuated by a growl.
Yes, he does make the best despairing noises, George Corgan. And speaking of despair, Chris Woff's here as well. Chris, are you all right?
Yeah, just the buzzword that George and I have written about tomorrow as well at Newcastle United. This has been a fortnight of reset, and I feel that I have reset myself, ready to come back and perform today.
Oh, that's good.
Have you done that? An enema or a bath? Or
Just a conversation with George. He's just such a motivational figure that meeting him for a coffee yesterday has just really lifted my spirits.
It's like when you do a full factory reset on your phone and all your data and your photos go missing. Is it kind of like that? Have you just forgotten everything?
You know, yeah. It's become, you know, our roles have reversed on this podcast. It's like I've been the positive one, but it's like, and before the match last weekend, it was like, yeah, I'm going to see a Newcastle team lift a trophy. It's like, it's the only thing that's missing. And now it's like, I'm back in the place. I've reconciled myself. That is never going to fucking happen. And it reminds me of that lovely Newcastle shirt that I took a photo of years and years ago. A lad outside the Millburn stand who had a shirt that said, winnings for losers. For losers. Winnings for losers. I'm back in that mentality. Who wants to win? It's boring.
Slip it back on like a lovely, comfortable old cardigan, haven't you?
That's right, yeah.
Fabulous.
Yeah.
Right then, chaps, let's crack on. An unbelievable amount of news on and off the pitch since we last got together. Where to start? Let's get a couple of the small things out of the way quickly. Friendlies in Australia announced immediately after we recorded our last show, as always the way. 3 days after the most arduous season the club has ever seen on the other side of the world. This, Chris Woff, is absolute madness, is it not?
Yes, well, an immediate thought. It does seem to be complete madness that this is not necessarily something new for some of the other sort of like big six clubs. They have done these sort of post-season friendlies before, but Newcastle entering this PSR world when they're trying to, in any way they possibly can, expand commercial revenues is very much one of their attempts to do that. And so they're going to play Spurs and an A-League All-Star 11 in two friendlies, as you say, immediately after the end of the season, which I'm not sure Eddie Howe and the players will have been delighted by, but that's where this, I suppose, commercial pressures meet the need for rest and rehabilitation for these players. So that's very much the difficult situation that Newcastle find themselves in this club, this desire to grow, but also then what sort of effect that has on the rest of the football club. So yes, I'm sure for all those Newcastle fans out in Australia who are going to try and get the games, I'm sure this is wonderful for them. They're going to be in playing in some huge arenas. But actually, for the players themselves, I'm not sure this is exactly the news they want ahead of major tournaments, the Copa America and the Euros as well.
Yeah, it's an awful long way to go for a bit of a kickabout, isn't it?
And literally, as we're recording, there is some even bigger news concerning Newcastle United, and more specifically, Sandro Tonali, who currently is about halfway through his 10-month ban for betting offences, but he has now been charged, having been serving that due to what was a charge from the Italian Football Federation, which he was found guilty of. He has subsequently been charged with 50 betting offences by the English FA, the English Football Association, which relates to placing bets on football matches between the 12th of August 2023, which was the date that he made his debut and scored against Aston Villa, and the 12th of October 2023, which was the date he was questioned by authorities in Italy with the start of the case. He did play two matches after that time. We are unsure at this stage. We have no further information as to whether that relates to any game that Sandro Tonali was involved in, whether that relates to Newcastle United matches. All of that at this stage, it's still a breaking story. We're unsure on this front, but this essentially relates to potential gambling offences, alleged gambling offences during his time at Newcastle United, those first 2 months at the club. So what is going to happen next? We wait and see. He has till the 5th of April to respond to the charges. Newcastle United have acknowledged them. People at Newcastle are not surprised by this. They did expect this from the very start. They insist that Sandro Tonali has cooperated with authorities throughout, and they hope and are confident that any potential charge and suspension that would come his way would run concurrently with his present suspension. But it will be decided eventually by an independent panel if he is found guilty of these offences. So it is a frustration. It's another blow in a tumultuous season for Newcastle and Sandro Tonali. And the hope has to be, from a Newcastle point of view and from the player's perspective point of view, that if he does receive any further punishment, that it does run concurrently so that he can still return at the end of August as he's currently scheduled to do so.
Okay, we'll have to keep an eye on that. Hopefully he doesn't get any extension to the punishment he's already had. Amanda Staveley's legal dispute with Greek shipping magnate Victor Restis was resolved, albeit not in the way she would have wanted. You were in court for a couple of those days, Jacob. What was it like? And God, it's not exactly a great result for her, is it?
No, I like the way Vaz sort of described in the same sort of way. Not a great result for the lads.
Yeah,
I put my legal hat on, my legal wig, and went along and watched it amongst some of the more dry proceedings I've watched. But then again, I've also watched 10 years of Everton playing football, so that's nothing new.
Good.
Yes, it is a loss for Staveley. It means that she now has 30 days to repay Victor Restis, the shipping magnate, 3-point-something million. Based on a loan which she initially made, which she initially received 15 years ago. Now, Restis was initially asking for 30-something million. That was as a result of these interest payments, which he eventually dropped as a claim. But if Staveley doesn't find this 3 million in the next month, then she could potentially face bankruptcy charges.
Not ideal. Are we expecting an appeal of any kind? What, if anything, does it mean for Newcastle United?
Staveley's said she's going to appeal, and that means that at the moment it means very little for Newcastle United, just kind of a co-owner or director having legal proceedings going on. It's also important to stress that this is civil and not criminal, but basically until we actually reach a point where she might potentially face bankruptcy, everything will continue. When bankruptcy does come in, or if it does, then it starts to contravene the owners and directors test, and so at that point changes may have to be made. But it kind of feels a little bit like we're getting ahead of ourselves there, like it's at least three or four different court proceedings down the line if it would happen at all.
Fair play.
And bigger picture, you would expect her to pay up and avoid that. I mean, I think that would be the expectation, right?
Yeah, that's quite right. She has personal liability as well as PCP Capital Partners. And I mean, the essential point of this is if she finds the money within 1 month, which there's no reason to believe that she won't, then this matter is all over, done and dusted.
Right, that's that done. Let's move on, chaps. Saturday saw an attendance of 3,719 at Lucas Kenilworth Road for the FAWL Cup final. Newcastle United versus Hashtag United. Before the match, it seemed as though Newcastle were providing 3,700 of those fans, with 19 making a short trip from Essex. I mean, that's how it felt. George, Cup Finals, Newcastle United. What could possibly go wrong?
Well, I mean, the answer to that is everything, and
yeah.
that's pretty much what happened. No, I mean, as per usual, everything around it was great. It was fun to go back to Luton. You know, it's such an atmospheric stadium,
yeah.
And it was great to meet up with Ollie and Jacob. And one of the other high points was actually meeting up with Josh Downey from Philadelphia. Regular listeners will remember him from last summer, meeting him at the tailgate in Philadelphia. Now, Josh had come all the way over for for this match, which was incredible. And there was a fan zone beforehand, and we met up with him. So have a listen to this.
So Josh, regular listeners of the pod will remember Josh, who's my Philly brother, who we met with pre-season this summer, and it was great to meet you then and chat to you.
Yeah,
Josh, you're a madman. I mean, you've flown over for this game, right?
Yeah, I fly home Monday, so it's just for this game. I tried to see if I could stay for maybe the West Ham, but it just didn't work out.
And so, I mean, so what was your thought process? Okay, they're in a cup final.
Yeah.
So do you watch the women's games?
Yeah, it started about 2 years ago. I saw a video when Adam covered them.
Yeah.
And when we were still, I guess it was a league ago.
Yeah.
And just really fell in love with how dedicated, again, the fan base is.
Yeah.
Even though it was the women's league or women's team, and they're in the fourth league. So I've been a huge fan of Georgia Gibson for a while. Yeah. And yeah.
And so this is your first Newcastle match on English soil.
Yep, first competitive Newcastle match of any kind.
Right, and because you're a psychopath, can you please explain to everybody what it is you're doing tomorrow?
So tomorrow, I'm driving round trip up to Newcastle from Luton and back. I'm getting the stadium tour, the classic, and then I'm going to meet up with some people that I've met at the Philly fan group that were from Newcastle. And they're going to show me around the city a little bit.
Well, I'm gutted that I can't do that, because like a normal person, I'm staying in London for an extra day. And I mean, but like, I guess, I mean, doing that kind of journey would feel like ridiculous to us. But for you, this is just like going to visit your neighbour, right?
Yeah, I mean, not quite the neighbour, but yeah. So I grew up 4 hours from all my extended family. So right. This is like going home to see my family for me.
And you've actually been doing some research with your aunt, and you've discovered you've got family in the Northeast, right?
Yeah, I just found out that my aunt's, so like my dad's grandparents' mother, they were from the Quayside, and then also had some in Auckland, which you said was near you, where you're from, and I literally had no clue. I became a Geordie honorary through my friend from Edinburgh, and he taught me everything it was about, but I didn't think I had any genetic connection, so maybe it was just in my blood that I'd find my way home.
Well, it's just absolutely brilliant that you're here. I woke up this morning incredibly excited, really looking forward to it. I mean, the idea of Newcastle winning something is something I can't be blasé about it.
Yeah, it doesn't matter what league, what tier, whether it's women, we support them all, and a cup is a cup.
I actually met Josh for a pint on Monday as well, and I mean, he's an incredible fella. I mean, he's absolutely lovely, brilliant. And on the Sunday, he drove to Newcastle and back, as he talked about there. He did a stadium tour.
Amazing.
You know, I think this season we've heard a lot of sort of debate in terms of tickets and ticketing and who should be allowed to go to games, and, you know, tourists, there's been that sort of word. I mean, Josh, you know, is absolutely every bit as committed a Newcastle fan as anybody I know. It was brilliant to see him. What a lovely fella. And yeah, he's hoping to come back for a men's match. He's still not seen a men's match sometime in the near future. So hopefully he'll get to do that, and I'll have a pint with him all over again. What a man.
I mean, the commitment levels are astonishing, George, but we have to point out that Josh is a lunatic, isn't he? I mean, he's practically certifiable for the amount of travelling he's done for that. That is unbelievable.
I mean, as he said, it was like, you know, him driving to Newcastle from Luton is a family trip
popping
for him.
Up the road.
He does that sort of stuff. It's just popping up the road. And he said he enjoyed it. And he's actually a very grounded, sensible fellow. Certainly when you talk to him about the team, you know, or teams, you know, there's no sort of sense of anger or annoyance with how things have gone this season. Talked about it in terms of, you know, expected, but no, just a lovely fella.
And there's that pre-cup final feeling yet again, isn't there? Pre-match nerves a la Cog. And a bit of a trigger warning on this little clip you're going to hear for agonising content. Have a listen to this.
How are your nerves?
I do feel a bit sick, yeah. I feel nervous. I woke up feeling really excited. And I've got that proper big day nervousness. It's a lovely feeling to have. But you mentioned that Wolves game. I think, you know, 2-0 down at half-time, I think you're reasonable. It's a reasonable question to ask whether there's half an eye on this game this weekend, and then they just kind of blast it back. I just think that sort of confidence part of it is just so interesting and exciting. But I'm bang up for it. I've got a press pass, but I'm going to be in the stands as well. I'm really looking forward to it, and can't be blasé about Newcastle winning a trophy.
having first cup trophy under the new ownership.
That's the idea. Came close last season, obviously, at Wembley, wasn't to be. I think there would be something very symbolic about that, and I think it would be, you know, the team is on the verge of a second consecutive promotion, which is extraordinary. But
would this be the first cup win for a Newcastle team since your birth? Because wasn't the Interfairs was 1969?
Intercity Fairs Cup, a competition which no longer exists. Yeah, that was the year before I was born. I mean, the women's team, we have to remember, they have won things in their history, but it's only been in the last couple of years that they've officially been part of the team. And I also don't want to, like, lump 69 years of history onto their shoulders, because that's not fair. At the same time, though, so many members of this team watched Newcastle, the men's team, growing up. You know, Charlotte Potts has talked about watching Sir Bobby Robson's team in the Champions League. Amber Keegan, we know about her heritage. It's there in her name. She was born in 92, the year Keegan came back to Newcastle, and of course the team came so close to winning things. And plenty of others besides, you know, Katie Barker, number 9, her heroes, Alan Shearer, he came back to Newcastle with the idea of winning something. So that idea of Newcastle and not winning something is part of their heritage anyway, or a lot, you know, a big part of the team. It would just be very, very special if they could do it. I want to know what it feels like to look across a stadium, see a player in black and white holding up a trophy. What does that feel like?
I don't know. I'm an Everton fan.
Yeah.
Oh, it's the same. It's the same sentiments, isn't it, that we heard at Wembley last year? It's the same sort of feelings. That spark, that little bit of optimism, that little bit of hope that is slowly just snuffed out.
It just makes me want to do those train groans again. It's very, just, man.
Absolutely. Right, let's have a little chat about the match itself, chaps. Newcastle, the better technicians, and everything's going swimmingly for them at 1-0, Jacob. It looked like Newcastle were in charge.
Yeah, they started well, and what I was quite impressed about was how just composed they were at playing out from the back and building their game, and they were really getting through the midfield with ease. I mean, Charlotte Potts was very good in terms of beating players in the middle, so too Jasmine McQuaid, and Newcastle were creating chances.
Yeah.
They were just struggling to finish it, but I mean, ultimately, it wasn't them who finished the first goal. There was a cross in from the left, and it was a horrible sliced own goal into #United's own net by the centre-back.
Yeah, and it's one of those, Chris, isn't it, as well, where it doesn't matter how many times we watch Newcastle, when we score a goal, we're always vulnerable, and #United equalised pretty quickly straight after that.
Yeah, I mean, just before we get onto that, I just want to clarify that this is in the pantheon of own goals as well. I mean, this was quite a cracker of an goal. It was a cracker of an own goal.
Haven't you seen the own goal from Latvia a couple of years ago?
Hilarious.
Where it's in from like a 1 yard. I was like, that felt like a very Newcastle sort of thing to happen. You could really imagine it.
He put it in from the touchline pretty much while the goalkeeper was still checking his gloves. And
I got asked to do some trigonometry for it and work out for Nick Miller at The Athletic what percentage of a goal it was. And it turned out that there's a 1.5 degree angle available to him, and he could see approximately 1.37% of a goal.
It was like that Roberto Carlos one that he scored. That sort of goal.
It's like XG all over again, this, isn't it?
Incredible.
Sorry for not using a round integer like 1, 2, 4 or 72, George. Jesus.
Well, I don't know what that means either. Come on. Come on.
But in terms of the game itself, yeah, Newcastle take the lead through that, and then, yeah, almost a sucker punch of conceding basically immediately. It's an almost instantaneous response, which I think from #United's point of view, given their own goal they've just given away, was probably really lifted their spirits, rather than maybe it could have gone the other way. And so that was the frustration. But I think it was a fairly even game the first half, so I think it was sort of fair enough in some ways that, yeah, but Newcastle were vulnerable once it conceded.
One of the things that I thought would happen, firstly, get that early goal, Newcastle then, you know, take a breath and power ahead, because they, you know, they're capable of doing that. The second thing I thought is that as the game goes on, you know, their superior fitness will come into play, not questioning #Newcastle being a good team, but obviously Newcastle are full-time, they're professional, and we've seen that so many times that they've ended games strongly because, you know, they've got that power in their legs. They, you know, they can rest at night, they train during the day, they've got all that sort of infrastructure behind them, and it was the opposite. It looked like they were weighed down. They looked tired. And I do think, I mean, it's like I said beforehand in that little clip talking about the 69 years, it's unfair to put them on their shoulders, but it's something that they feel, and they looked like they felt it. They did look like they were feeling the emotion of the day, And, you know, we certainly all felt it in the stands. It just ebbed away from us.
I do think it's notable that Newcastle's worst passage of a game by distance came after they conceded the second goal from 73 minutes onwards. Yeah. They really were struggling to impose themselves. And in terms of being able to patiently build up play, there's this kind of switch where Am Keegan stopped us, moved into midfield to get technical control. She was doing that. But then at the same time, Newcastle were almost trying to rush the ball up the pitch, and it was all quite disjointed.
Yeah.
And that kind of shows, I think, the element of panic slash reality which was setting in, that this day which they went in undoubtedly expecting to win.
Colgan's done a waff.
Colgan has pulled a waff. What the hell has just happened?
I just dropped a, charging up a speaker, and I'm just I just dropped it. Right, there's my doorbell. Sorry. Fucking hell.
It's all going swimmingly so far.
Yeah, Newcastle through and through.
Doorbell ringing.
So, right, George, are you okay? Are you ready to start again?
Yeah, I suppose so, yeah.
You got any more technology you want to smash before we continue, or is that you done now?
Yes, everything I own, including this laptop that we're recording
excellent.
On.
Excellent. So, cup final, PTSD and heartbreak once again. Let's hear from the camp. First, a very emotional Amber Keegan Stobbs, and then Becky Langley.
It's just a massive part of the game.
Yeah,
the wins and the losses, and everyone obviously thinks football is all about the wins, but it's the occasions, it's the memories you make with each other, and it's the journey we're on as a club is still amazing. The journey we're on as a team is unbelievable, and I think proud to be part of it, devastated, heartbreak, but these are the times that you learn the most lessons from, and we will regroup, we'll bounce back, and this team's unbelievable, and we'll focus on what we kind of learn here, and we've got a task ahead of us, four games, and that's really, really important.
Is that the sort of message, because that was a very long get together at the end, you heard on the pitch there, big sort of huddle, is that what that was all about, sort of saying this is an incredible season, top of the league as everyone was singing, and really that's what it's about?
Yeah, just about getting behind each other and learning from the lessons, and kind of that we're still very on task. Yes, we've fallen at this one, but we've got a job to do, and I fully back us to do it. Sometimes you learn the biggest lessons, and we've maybe got a bit grounded, and we'll go after it, and we'll pick our heads up, pick each other up, and keep going.
Got to feel the pain of watching them lift the trophy and not us, and be respectful and show our opponents the respect they deserve, because they were the better team on the day. The other thing I said to the players was that, you know, winning is not always the only measure of success. We've had a lot of success across the season, merging from a part-time to a full-time programme, navigating lots of challenges and obstacles along the way, and the people that these players are, I'm just so proud of them. The way the staff and the players have supported me this week has just been phenomenal, so yeah, I can't thank them anymore. I lost my nana 2 days ago, which obviously was heartbreaking for me and my family. To have my mum, my sister and the rest of my family and partner watching, it's just incredible for them to have made that journey and under such circumstances. But I think the most thing I'm proud of this week is just the reaction from the players, the way them and the staff have supported me. I'm more proud of that than I actually am it was actually getting to the final. It's been lovely to have their support, and they've done everything for me this week, so I've tried my best to ensure that hasn't affected anything in terms of our preparations. We've worked incredibly hard and kept our focus, but unfortunately it just hasn't been enough.
I mean, you know, Amber's our friend. Very difficult to chat to her straight afterwards there. Tears were just pouring down her face, and she felt it absolutely to the core of her being. Newcastle fan, was desperate to win a trophy for the club she supported all her life. And then, of course, Becky, it was an incredibly emotional week for her, losing her grandma like that. Mm. And, you know, they're a very tight group. They all wanted to kind of do it for her. And, you know, it just did feel like the sort of, you know, that emotional side of it was huge. But, you know, they're a brilliant team. I wouldn't want any of them to think that they sort of let the club down, let Newcastle down, because they certainly didn't. It wasn't our day, but it's been an exceptional season, and an exceptional two seasons. So it's the start of something, and that's the way they have to think about it, and it's the way that we have to think about it too. Disappointing though it was.
Absolutely, and Newcastle's women have their first home game in 42 days this Sunday when Liverpool Feds come to town. Just a note, there's no metros running at Kingston Park, but bus travel is free when you show your match ticket, so check with the club for details. Back-to-back titles in sight, and congratulations to Courtney Vacher and the women's development team who won their league this week. The future's certainly bright, Jacob, isn't it?
Yeah, it is, and I mean, this is all part of a general Newcastle project, something which Amanda Staveley has really bought into in terms of building the next generation in the academy, not just on the men's side, which is what we probably spend too long thinking about, but also on the women's side. Because when Newcastle get promoted to the Championship, whether they finish it this year or it's the year after, and then eventually the WSL, more spending rules start to come into force. And just like on the other side, Newcastle need to start producing their own talent. And so it's excellent that the women's development team are winning these trophies at a decent level.
Right then, let's move on, chaps. We'll be back in just a moment to talk about Eddie Howe's international break, Mags.
Come on, you Maggies.
So here we go, last quarter of the Premier League season. If you thought we'd be getting any respite as far as injuries are concerned, you'd be wrong, 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 wrong. Chris, Sven Botman's knee has essentially given up, hasn't it? It's all gone wrong yet again.
It has, yes. I mean, Botman went off against Man City, and it looked like he might have had a problem with his knee at that stage. Now, obviously, we know early in the season he'd had an issue with his knee, and he came out and gave remarks basically suggesting that he'd had different verdicts from different specialists as to whether he'd fully ruptured it or not, and so they opted against surgery. There was different recommendations on it. They opted against surgery at that point. He came back after 3 months, I think, or 2 or 3 months it was, and did play again. Didn't look right, certainly towards the end of that period, and he was then rested at Blackburn in February in the Cup, and then continued to play on, but then Newcastle insists that this was a fresh injury, a new to the same knee, and that now it is a full rupture. And so Botman is undergoing surgery, yeah, and is going to miss between 6 and 9 months. So he's out for the remainder of this season. We're going to miss at least the start of next season, if not possibly basically the rest of 2024. And so that is a significant blow. I know he's tried to avoid that. Seemingly his comments, his remarks that he put out there, he's tried to avoid that scenario. He clearly didn't want to have to go down this route unless he really, really had to. But a huge blow for Newcastle, and that is another player they're not going to have for an extended period. And so for the running, they're going to be stretched defensively now, whereas most of the issues really over the course of the last few months have been more in midfield and attack. Now they're going to be stretched defensively with certainly on form one of the very best players now unavailable.
And this was the number one subject of listener messages. Is it fair to point fingers at the medical department, as Dave from Western Australia has in typical Aussie style? Now, if you are offended by swearing, I would maybe turn this bit off. Sven is gone for up to 9 months. Well, fuck a duck. Nothing like fucking up the end of the season and the start of next. I was going to attempt the accent for that, George, but I decided against it in the end. I think that was probably a wise choice.
Rack off, Charlene. That's all I've got. Is it fair to point fingers at the medical department? Well, I mean, the thing is, we know for a fact that a lot of the injuries Newcastle have suffered from this season have been freak injuries. There's nothing you can do about Nick Pope dislocating his shoulder when he does a dive that he would do 1,000 times, yeah, in a week or a couple of weeks. There's nothing you can do about Dan Byrne breaking his back when he lands awkwardly.
Yeah.
You know, Jacob Murphy dislocating shoulders, you know, whatever. There's been a lot of those injuries about, and there isn't much you can do about that. Chris and I are writing about sort of Newcastle injuries this season. One of the things for Newcastle, one of the difficult things is that it becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy, because it's not only about having players out, it's about players playing with niggles, playing with knocks, playing too long without a break, so they therefore become more susceptible to injury. And then when players are coming back, normally, you know, coaching staff, manager, medical staff would work together to make sure that those players are assimilated back into the team in a gradual fashion. That's been a luxury Newcastle have not had. So players have come straight back, and then they've put themselves more at risk of injury too. And so, you know, in terms of fault, there will, you know, that's not the kind of culture Newcastle are trying to engender at the minute. They're trying to sort of take collective responsibility, but there is a big focus on trying to understand what's happened, why, if there are parts of training or the training regime or what they do and how they do it is affecting player injuries or not. And they're trying to, now it's, they're trying to find out as they go. Now that's impossible. It's going to take until the end of the season when they have a bit of respite to actually look at this in an in-depth fashion. But there's no doubt about it, the fact that they've had so many injuries has ended up causing more injuries.
And yet misery upon more injury misery. Lewis Miley hurt is back on England duty as well. The season could be over. Probably would be the sensible decision, really, wouldn't it, Jacob? A young man, you want to protect him. He's already played a lot of football.
So for a bit of background on this, he felt a pain in his back while in international duty. He was dealing with it for about a week or so. And I think there's recognition from England, from Newcastle, from Miley himself, that it's not really been normal to have a 17-year-old play the number of minutes he has at this age, coming almost in a way from so far away from the first team. So they're doing scans, they're doing tests. I think those happened earlier in the week to establish exactly what the issue is. I think there is actually hope that 6 weeks has been talked about. I think there's hope. They're hopeful that it will actually be less than that, because obviously 6 weeks takes you right towards the end of the season, but we'll undoubtedly know more in a day or two, or as is always with this podcast, probably have an announcement about 1 hour after we finish recording.
I do think that's really important, because, you know, it's very understandable that as Newcastle have been on this sort of difficult run of form, difficult run of matches, people have been saying, why hasn't Miley been playing, particularly when Sean Longstaff has been struggling? We know that Sean has been having injections on his injury, playing with the injury. And this is the big thing. It's, you know, that they are acutely conscious that Miley is still growing, that he's still growing into his body, that he's played far more often than he was expected to, and that there's a danger in overworking his body. And this injury has come as a surprise. You know, the Botman one hasn't, because it's been clear that he's been labouring over recent weeks. The Miley injury has come as a surprise, and it's precisely what they were hoping to avoid.
Chris, is there any good news about squad strength or player fitness? Have we got anybody due back?
You mean beyond my reset?
Yeah, beyond your reset, yeah.
Well, Tino Livramento, Kieran Trippier and Harvey Barnes have all missed either one or two of the last couple of matches, and they should be in and around. Maybe not all of them available for Saturday, but certainly there'll be an opportunity there. I mean, again, we're going to hear from Eddie Howe tomorrow, and I imagine that he probably rule all three of them out, and then they'll all start on Saturday, is how these things usually go. So, but no, that is sort of a positive there. It's also, this fortnight has given another 2 weeks for Joe Willock, Elliot Anderson, Matt Target in particular to get more training time, and to that sort of, I think Joe Willock in particular really sort of needed that, having come back and played a few matches, maybe needed just a couple of weeks of training to get back to where he was. So that's really where Newcastle are. I think that you may see, I think Livramento's got a decent chance of being involved. He's probably the most likely. And then Barnes and Trippier maybe there or thereabouts. Certainly, I would say, if not for Saturday or Tuesday, then I think they've certainly got a chance of being back for Fulham the following weekend.
And Chris, you've watched every second of every international game this week, haven't you? Can we have your full international Chris Woff report, please?
Yeah, I mean, that's slight exaggeration.
No. Every second of every game. That's what's written down.
Massive England head.
Yeah, I mean, the only international football I have actually seen is I saw the clip of the quickest ever international goal, which was beyond Martin Dubravka. But having read up quite a lot on it and seen things, there was some, I mean, Anthony Gordon, by all accounts, did very well on his England debut, was picked out by most people as the star man, or at least one of the star men in the first half of that game, playing on the left.
Had a good chance, didn't he, as well, against Brazil, nearly scored.
If you say so. And then Bruno Guimaraes, have he played in that game as well? I think he is. The other match that he played against Spain, he was taken off at half time and seemed to get a bit of a kicking in the Brazilian media, as he seems to do from time to time. Dubravka, as I say, conceded that goal. He then pulled out of international duty due to personal reasons. We don't know exactly what it is now, but told it isn't an injury, so hopefully he will be all right for this weekend for Newcastle. Another weird one was Alexander Isak played for Sweden, but in both matches he didn't actually play as a striker. He played as sort of a hybrid number 8 and number 10 in the first game, and then he played as a left winger in the other match. I mean, obviously we've seen him as a left winger for Newcastle, even briefly as a number 10, but he was basically an attacking midfield for Sweden, which is not a position I think he suggested he didn't enjoy it that much, and I don't think we're likely to see him there for Newcastle, seeing as they don't have another centre forward. So I very much imagine Alexander Isak will be starting through the middle against West Ham on Saturday.
Chris Woff, Geordie third, pessimist second, Englishman first.
100%. Do we know what Eddie Howe and the non-internationals have been up to? George, Jacob, does anyone have any info on that?
Yeah, well, actually, Chris and I have written about this, so check this out on The Athletic on Friday or beyond. I think we've got the tone of this podcast wrong from the start, I have to say, because albeit Chris talked about a reset, he's just reset himself back into misery. But very much the tone at Newcastle over the past fortnight has been about reset, recalibration, and sort of trying to start again, because they recognise this is a big moment. Yes, Manchester City in the FA Cup was hugely disappointing. They can't win a trophy now. That's going to go on to 70 years without a domestic trophy. And yes, this has been a grueling season in terms of the league. But they still have a chance in these last 10 games to qualify for Europe, to get some momentum behind them, and to get a bit of consistency in performance and result. Now, that's really, really important. So that idea of reset, recalibration, what does that actually mean? Well, there's been a couple of things. Firstly, Howe and the squad, who aren't on international duty, have gone to Dubai. There was a bit of rest and relaxation after the City game. They took it easy. They recovered, got a bit of sun on their faces. They've done some team bonding stuff. And as the week moved on, it got more and more intense, to the extent that by the end of it, it was sort of seen or described as a mini pre-season. That was the idea of it. Now, the counterpoint to that, of course, is that however good that is, you're still relying on players coming back from international duty, physically fit, in a good frame of mind, and they've lost those other two players. But that's very much the mood internally, and that's very much the messaging that they've given, that, you know, this kind of break has served them really well in the past. It's a chance for people to kind of get away from a bit of the misery here, get some sunshine and refocus. And then the other thing that's been happening back at the training ground, this is important as well, is that Amanda Staveley and Mirdad Gudusi have been there. Newcastle don't have a sporting director at the moment, with Dan Ashworth on gardening leave ahead of going to Manchester United. And those two have been there basically to try and reassure people, to sort of explain that the club is still functioning, to hear what people's problems are, to try and do a bit of problem solving, and to take over that role as far as possible, because you don't want the burden going onto Howe's shoulders at this really crucial part of the season. So there is this attempt to reset the mood in a positive, focused way. It's the league now. We've got 10 games. Let's finish the season strongly. Let's get back into Europe and then use the summer to really recharge the batteries.
In terms of their form post these mid-season breaks, so Newcastle, their coach and staff see them as a real positive, and that really in previous years that's helped. The season Newcastle avoided relegation, obviously they beat Leeds and then they went away to Saudi Arabia in January 2022, came back and won 6 out of their next 7 games. The following year they went to Dubai in February 2023 and then they won 6 of the next 7. So this is something where they've used these breaks really well. They've used them for these sort of mini resets, and that's very much the hope this year. The difference then, I suppose, certainly to February 2023, maybe not January 2022, because Newcastle obviously had had a lot of struggles that season, but the difference this season and last season is that Newcastle haven't had that sustained form that they had last year, and so they are coming from a lower base, but equally there is still a belief that they can really attack these final 10 games of the season.
Yes, and Newcastle are back in action against West Ham this weekend. Jacob, how do we see this one shaping up? West Ham, not awful form recently. They've won 2 of their last 5. They've only lost 1. They're not doing too badly at the minute.
Well, I was desperately searching just now for a statistic which I remember working out after the last international break, which is that Newcastle, after these mini resets under Eddie Howe, I think have won every game apart from one, which was a draw. with a goal difference of something like 25 goals to 4. So if you take that and run it forward, Newcastle are in really good stead for this. It was a weird game at the Olympic Stadium earlier this season. I was there, in which Newcastle really were outplayed by West Ham for long periods and were kind of indebted to two really good improvised finishes from Alex Isak. And at the same time, West Ham have had a season which is a little bit comparable to Newcastle in that they've been very inconsistent. But, I mean, they're doing better in the league than Newcastle, even if the ire of fans is kind of harsher on David Moyes than Newcastle's fans' views are of Eddie Howe. It's one where, at home after the international break, I would expect Newcastle to win, but you see players such as Jad Bowen who had an excellent international break, yeah. Lucas Paquetar, and you know that they have easily enough danger to trip Newcastle up.
George already knows, because I've said this to him already, that I've had one of my
trademark,
and for the benefit of listeners, usually terrible sort of feelings and predictions before the game. And I've got a bad feeling about Saturday. Yeah, I know. God, I know.
Here we are.
I know. I mean, there is no understating though how big these two games are. Though I think we talk about this 10-game reset, but for Newcastle to have back-to-back home matches in the space of 4 days immediately after the international break, this is huge. If they want to have any chance of getting into Europe, they need to get positive results in these two matches. They've got an Everton side on Tuesday who Jacob will know it's been about 3 years since they've won a game. And West Ham, to me, the issue I've got with West Ham, the reason that I have this sort of slight trepidation is what worked for Newcastle in the Wolves match was that they were able to sort of sit back and let Wolves have the ball, and then they counter-attacked against them. And that sort of worked for them, and people are like, is this a sort of model going forward? I can't see West Ham wanting to let Newcastle, even if Newcastle try to let West Ham have the ball, West Ham will want to counter-attack. So I don't see that game plan necessarily working. Now, that's not me saying that Eddie Howe isn't he's more than capable, him and his coaches, to have coming up with another game plan. I just think a counter-attacking team like West Ham, given Newcastle's susceptibility in transition over the course of the last few months, my concern is this is exactly the ideal team to play against Newcastle on Saturday. It feels like a huge match. Newcastle are currently 10th in the form table, which is exactly where they are on the Premier League table, so they deserve to be where they are. Thankfully, West Ham are below them in the form table, are 13th. But yeah, I just think this game, I'm nervous about this match. I think it is a real tone setter.
Does anyone remember when Mark Lawrenson used to do his predictions on BBC?
Yeah, very well.
People used to take the piss out of him for predicting every year that Liverpool go the entire season unbeaten. I just feel like there's an equivalent with Chris, where Newcastle earned 9 points from draws all season in the WAF verse.
Don't think I'm that positive.
I don't agree. I think my concern is not the way Newcastle will start the game. I think Newcastle will start well. I think they'll start full of endeavour. I think the positivity of the last sort of 10 days, 2 weeks, in terms of their messaging, will be enough to set them on their way. My concern would be what happens if they go a goal behind, what happens if they don't score an early goal. Do they have the numbers and personnel to change the game? But I do agree with Chris. I think it's really important. I think the run-in is very important. Newcastle do have to find some momentum from somewhere. They have to show that not only the players that they'd like to sign this summer, that this is still a project worth investing in, being part of. They have to do it to the players they already have as well. And I do think that being part of Europe is really important to that. And, you know, they need to show it to their fans. They need to show everybody that they're still on track, that, yes, this has been a tough season, but it can end well. And I think if that happens, then I think we can look back and say it's been a good season. But I do think it hangs in the balance. We were asked as athletic writers to sort of grade our teams over the international break. And I gave Newcastle a C, but you know, I think it could finish a D or it could finish a B if they get back into Europe. I mean, I think it's so difficult to grade when there's been so many highs and also so many lows. It's still in their hands to turn this into a good and positive season.
So we simply didn't have time to talk about sporting directors today, but there's plenty of chatter around, several thousand names linked, including a certain Hugo Viana. We'll get into that next week, hopefully. And one last question from Rich. Now that Lewis Miley's out for the next 6 weeks, I think it's official that we are cursed. What are we willing to do in order to break this curse? Let's go to Chris Wolf first. Chris, what would you do to break the curse?
Sacrifice George.
Fair play.
Wow.
Well, it's funny you say that, because in the taxi back to the station after the game, George was asked what he would do to win a trophy and how long he would be bedridden for in order to cut a deal and see Newcastle win. And I was expecting him to be like, oh, I'd stay bedridden for a month, unable to move, to be able to do it. No, he said 3 days and it'd have to be alcohol involved.
That's fair enough. At least he's honest. At least he's honest.
I'm not going to actually tell the full story about that, because that actually wasn't the full story. I would stay. I mean, bed. I do my best work in bed. There's no harm in like being bedridden. I mean, it's basically what I do. I'm sort of in bed 20 hours a day at the minute. I wake up. I work in bed. 2 o'clock. Get up. Do a podcast. Have a shower. Get back into bed. Go to sleep. I mean, that's pretty much how I function during winter. I mean, it wouldn't be that much of a change.
Can we make sure that George Corgan does his best work in the bedroom is your tagline on the Athletic website from now on, please? I'm very excited to see that. That'll be fabulous.
I suppose you're very unlucky that Bobby 90 missed out on an SJ award, but at least George will go home with the accolade of doing his best work in the bedroom on his new profile.
Definitely. Right then, chaps, that's it. Thank you very much for your time. Thanks, Jacob, for dropping in.
Thank you very much for having me. Pleasure as always.
Cheers, Chris.
You're very welcome. My mini pre-season has gone down well and we start again on Saturday.
And thank you very much, George. And he called you George Woff there. Sorry, George. Fucking hell.
Thereby fueling a lot of conspiracy theories about Chris and my relationship. We need to get Jacob on next week, don't we? The second show next week after Newcastle's triumphant 5-0 victory over Everton. That's enough to sustain me, that thought.
He's not biting, George. He's not taking it. He's not going for it.
I know how the last one went.
Right, then that's it. Thank you very much, chaps. Get yourselves in touch at podonthetyne at Twitter or X and email us at podonthetyne@theathletic.com. Nice to speak to you again. We'll see you on the other side of the weekend. Take care. Happy Easter. Bye-bye.
Athletic.